give you this morning gets better every time I give it. The reason is things are happening so fast, it's really exciting to tell you. And when we consider signs of the end, the list could just go on and on. I remember as a young pastor, when I was first in the pastoral work, that Kathy and I would scan the newspapers just hoping to find something that we could bring to prayer meeting to encourage our people that, you know, Jesus is coming and there are signs. There is so much stuff now that you, if you were to see me up here, I have to discard stuff just to bring you the most pertinent things. And it's kind of amazing that when we look back on time, and we look at all of the great time prophecies of the Bible, on every one we can stamp on there, fulfilled. They are simply a matter of history now, every one. We know that we're living in the time of the great antitypical day of atonement. The investigative judgment is going on in heaven right now. We know that we're on the very end, the very evening of the sixth and final earthly millennium. We're living in the Friday night of Earth's history. Are you aware that even non-Christians today recognize that something big is about to happen? There's a reference in the scripture. Maybe you'd like to look at it. I like unique verses. This one is Luke 21. And I believe we're going to look at the 25th verse, Luke 21, 25. And this one is a synoptic of Matthew 24. In other words, this is Luke's account of the end time events. And he says, there will be signs in the sun, Luke 21, 25, in the moon and in the stars, and on the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring. Now, the word that I want you to focus on right here is the word perplexity. You like word study? This is the only time that word occurs in the Bible. Perplexity. Now, there is one verse, there's a word that is translated perplexity once in the Old Testament. It's a different word. This was written in Greek, of course, the New Testament. And the word there in the Greek, in the English transliteration, is apeireia. And the literal meaning of that word is with no passage out. We would say today, no way out. People recognize that we are at the end. Most of you probably watch the evening news. Did you notice this week, I believe that it was on Wednesday evening when they talked about new kinds of virus diseases that are going to kill a whole village? Or did any of you hear to see that? It was amazing, the kind of stuff that's happening around the world today. We see and hear evidence that suggests a new world order is coming. There's a lot of talk about a cashless society, of using cards and so on, the reason to try to curb crime. Amazing. There are already several of the Revelation 13 type sanctions in the world community. Just a few months ago, before the United States reinstalled the Roman Catholic priest back into Haiti as the leader there, there was an embargo that you couldn't buy or sell to Haiti. Right now, try to buy or sell anything with Iraq. There's a world embargo. You can't buy or sell. That's the way they deal with people in the New World Order. They threatened to do it to North Korea. And North Korea back down, as you remember. Very, very interesting thing. Most of you are aware of what happened last year in Rwanda, where thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people were slaughtered. Do you understand what's happening in Burundi right now? The very thing could happen again. The Atlantic Monthly in April of 1994 stated that it had that the same type of anarchy that recently had been demonstrated in there may soon spread worldwide. In Nigeria, they stated, for example, It is also a small country, but instead of having 8 million people, there's nearly 90 million crowded into a small country with very little hard currency and a nearly non-existent government. The country is being run almost completely by thugs. We could talk about mega cities. Everybody knows how nice it is to live in the country and the views that you have here in the Western Carolinas. But do you realize that most people today live in big cities? Most people live in large cities. Very nearly, in the near future, there will be many cities with populations of more than 20 million each. Mexico City is one of those. We're aware of environmental problems worldwide that could threaten to swamp us. Entire books have been written on the subject. As a matter of fact, our current vice president is really a big person into environmentalism. By the way, I believe that the environment is something that we should all be concerned about, because as Christian stewards, we're not only concerned about money, but we're concerned about time and our talents and our testimony of God and so on. And also God has given us the dominion of the earth. But I want you to understand that it would be very possible for us to spend our entire budget in the church on just environmental concerns. But that is not our mission. And so my counsel to people is keep your bed made, dump the trash, and don't litter your yard, and so on. But leave the cleanup to the devil during the millennium, because the Bible says that the world is passing away and the lusts of it, but he that does the will of God abides forever. That's what we want to remember. Okay? Now, it's very interesting. I talked to you this morning about the Christian Coalition. I could talk to you for several hours about the rise of power of the Roman Catholic Church in the United States, because this sermon is not about that. I told you about the House and the Senate. I could tell you about the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, and the influence in the executive office. But just so you'll know that we know what's going on, I'll tell you only one. Nearly every person alive remembers when the Desert Storm War occurred, because we saw it on television. We even saw it on the receiving end when that guy from CNN was there and we saw the missiles coming into Baghdad and so on. You remember, don't you, who the two primary guys were who spoke about it on television? One of them was the Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, and the other one was the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, whose name is Colin Powell. Colin Powell is a wise man. A wise man resigns from his job when everybody likes him. That's the time to leave, okay? And so now he's even being talked about as a possible presidential or vice presidential candidate. But when he announced his retirement, something very unusual happened. The Joint Chiefs got together, and they said, these are the guys, in case you're not familiar with the term Joint Chiefs, this means that the head of the Marines and the Army and the Air Force and the Navy and so on, all of these branches of the military, the leaders got together, and they said, we need to give the president a list of people who would be qualified to take Colin Powell's place. And they narrowed it down to three people, from whom they said, if you pick one of these, we can work with him, he has the right education and experience and so on. Guess which one of those the president chose? He actually discarded the list and nominated someone who most of you, and myself included, had never heard of before. As a matter of fact, when he introduced him, as is customary at the Rose Garden at the White House, he could not even pronounce his name. He simply introduced him as General Shaley. He was speaking, of course, of General John Shaley Cashbelli, who at that time was the general in charge of the NATO forces in Europe. He is a Polish Roman Catholic immigrant to the United States who has the same background as the current Pope. He now heads up the largest army in the free world. We're talking about interesting stuff that are absolutely true facts that are printed in the national news magazines. Do you understand? It's very, very interesting. I could tell you more about that also. It's very interesting also that at the end of last year, 1993 actually, December of 93, it was announced in the Washington Post that finally, after about 30 years worth of negotiations, that the Vatican was finally recognizing Israel as a sovereign state. Now, the reason that the Israelis had sought this so long was because if they are not a sovereign state, they're just interlopers there and nobody's going to protect them. But guess whose recognition they wanted? The Vatican. Now, this is really, really amazing. And I'll talk to you some about this afternoon about the concessions that they wanted, the Vatican, that is. But the Vatican would not listen until finally the Israelis got their attention by saying, if you don't recognize us, we're going to start taxing your extensive holdings in the Holy Land in Israel, and you're going to have to start paying property taxes over here. That got their attention. And so they said, okay, we'll recognize you, but we want a place at the peace table. We want to be able to sit at the bargaining table. We want to establish Jerusalem as an international religious center. We want to be able to develop our land any way we want to. We don't want to be taxed on any of our property. And the Israelis gave them everything they asked for, just to be recognized as a sovereign state. 10 months later, they recognized the PLO, the Vatican did. Amazing things continue to happen. And as I mentioned to you earlier, the Protestants are leading out in what we call the worldwide ecumenical movement. Now, we could talk about the unusual prevalence of natural disasters around the United States and the world. The people that I talk to all over the United States and Canada do not know what you know. Many of you have friends or family in Florida. But you remember that the largest single natural disaster to hit the United States did so a couple of years ago, Hurricane Andrew. It destroyed in Florida in one night 63,000 homes in one night. 63,000. Did $31 billion in damage and caused 5 insurance companies to go out of business, left 300,000 people without homes. Now, here's the amazing part of all of that. God, in His mercy, allows us to see these judgments, but very few people lost their lives. Isn't that amazing? Very few people. The same thing could be said about the fires in California or the California earthquake that I'll mention to you in just a moment. It's really amazing also the Kobe, Japan earthquake. Considering the damage that was done, their pictures from Japan remind one of the pictures they sent us after the atomic bomb fell. There could have been many, many more thousands killed. I have the opportunity, of course, of flying back and forth across the United States on a regular basis. I remember flying across St. Louis, and usually we're going from Baltimore or Chicago to Denver or California or someplace where there's a plane change or whatever. But the planes fly at 35,000 feet going one way and 33,000 or 30,000 going the other way, so they don't have head-on crashes, you know. But the fascinating thing is I would always get a window seat. And I like to look out and see if I can recognize any place. And, of course, you can recognize the Mississippi River from 35,000 feet. You see the big arch there and everything. But for several months, we could not fly over St. Louis because the storm there had thunderheads 45,000 feet in the air. The planes could not go over them. We went around St. Louis. And finally, one day, we were taking a flight out toward Denver, and the pilot said, if you want to see the flood they've been talking about, look out to the left now. And I was looking out, and the Mississippi River, that is usually about a mile wide there, was 19 miles wide. Now, unless you lived in the Midwest, you don't even think about this. You see it on TV and you forget about it. The most amazing thing to me, interstate highways were underwater, bridges were underwater, farms were underwater. CNN interviewed a man whose house had been underwater. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about housing. As an attorney, I've done a number of title searches and so on, and I want to tell you that now, whenever you buy property, if your land happens to be in a floodplain, it must state it on your deed and also on the plat that the surveyor does. Does everybody understand what a floodplain is? Well, now, there's a really interesting thing. There's different kinds of floods. If you live to be 100 years old, you might see one flood in a 100-year floodplain. nobody's ever going to live to be 500 years old on this earth until after we get our eternal life granted to us by the Lord. But every 500 years, the flood might come up twice that high. St. Louis area received three 500-year floods in 1 year. This man's house didn't have water in the windows. It didn't just have it in the second floor. His whole house was underwater, including his chimney and his television antenna, three times in 1 year. And CNN said, why don't you just sell out and move somewhere? And the guy says, who would buy my house? So he has to dig the mud out and move it back in because all of his equity's in his house. And he didn't have flood insurance. Isn't that amazing? You see that kind of thing. I can remember January 17, 1994 is a very significant day for me because I was in California, Newport Beach, California, for a church meeting. And it was very interesting that it was 4:30 in the morning, but I was awake because, you know, your circadian rhythms or your biological clock is where you usually spend most of your time. So it was 7:30 back in Washington, and I was awake, but I wasn't out of bed yet because it was only 4:30 there, and I had been up having meetings on California time the night before. At any rate, I was awake, and my room started shaking. And I thought, well, I don't wonder what that is. And I was a little more awake, and I sat up, and then my room started really, really shaking. And I was on the sixth floor of this hotel, and it kept shaking. And it lasted for 45 seconds. It seemed like it was in a long, long time. My television fell over backwards, and water was sloshing out of the commode in my bathroom. And I was petrified. I'll just have to tell you that I was so frightened, I prayed out loud, God, please spare my life. When I was in law school for 3 years, I was in the building business and built about 45 houses. And I thought, how much can this hotel take? And so I sat in the transom between my room and its bathroom with my Levi's pulled on. I was barefooted. And an amazing thing, finally it stopped and I went over to the phone and I called down to the front desk and I said, I might be dreaming, but I think we just had an earthquake. And the poor guy down there, I'm sure he was really frustrated. He says, don't worry about it. We have these out here all the time. But that was the Los Angeles earthquake. But I was 35 miles from the epicenter. And where it really happened, people didn't just have their room shaken. People were thrown from their beds to the ceiling and hit the ceiling because it was an updraft one. Have you ever saw the big supports of the interstate highways came right through the bridge and the bridges collapsed and so on? Amazing. Now, what I found there was that at the epicenter, which was in the San Fernando Valley, there's three little towns there. We heard most about Northridge, but two other towns there, Canoga Park and Chatsworth. That is the headquarters. That's where the epicenter was. The headquarters for 90% of the pornographic literature and videos that's printed in this country. $3 billion annual video business. And all 70 of those companies received major damage. And again, very few people lost their lives. In my judgment, all of these things have special significance in regard to end time predictions. Now, it's very interesting. I want to tell you one other thing. The Washington Post on January the 1st of this year had a magazine insert in which it was entitled The End. And there's a 7-page article in it about all of the people worldwide that are thinking about the millennium. And essentially it says that something big is about to happen. It is my judgment that since most of the world is focused in on that, that if the devil does not impersonate the second coming of Christ in this decade, you're probably going to miss the best chance he'll ever have. And I'll share with you why this afternoon, why that probably will happen and what it will mean to us. But all of this stuff is just dicta, as we say in the law. The real focus, the real heart of the whole thing is Matthew 24:14 that was read this morning. So I want to read that to you and then show you of the special significance of where we are today. To me, this is the greatest sign that the coming of Christ is near. It's Matthew 24:14. You should have both this verse and the one before marked in your Bible. Because I'll mention the one before this afternoon. It says in verse 14, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations. Then what would happen? The end will come. Now, I know there are skeptics here. There are skeptics everywhere. I myself am a little bit skeptical, but I am an optimist. But we're going to discuss something that will make you very excited in the next few minutes. I want to read Ellen White's quote of this verse in Special Testimonies on Education, page 107. But there is a day that God hath appointed for the close of this world's history. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then the end shall come. And she says, her commentary now, prophecy is fast fulfilling. More, much more should be said about these tremendously important subjects. The day is at hand when the destiny of every soul will be fixed forever. Now, Seventh-day Adventists are not the only Christians interested in taking the gospel to all of the world. Everybody has heard about Net 95. I passed on Interstate 40 yesterday, coming between Hickory and Asheville, exit 55. And at that exit, you can take the exit and go to, I guess it's toward the east side of the interstate there, or the south side, and that's the entrance to the Cove, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association's place. You understand? Billy Graham was just recently on satellite television. You understand, of course, that they estimated his audience to be 1 billion people. He was on satellite in 165 countries at the same time. The Billy Graham Evangelistic Association wants to take the gospel to the whole world by the year 2000. The Roman Catholic Church does with its Evangelization 2000. There's much, much more that I could tell you about that. I have a cousin, a first cousin, Judy. She and her husband are with the Wycliffe Bible Translators. They spent many years in Peru. They're living in Central Africa right now. Do you understand, my friends, that in every written language on the earth, everyone who has a written language has the entire Bible now, right now? This is really interesting to me. Why does Wycliffe keep working then? Their goal is to go to every dialect on earth where they do not have a written language, and they send people in to live among these indigent peoples and learn their language and translate it into written language, and the very first thing these people will ever read is God's Word. That's what Wycliffe is doing right now, and they plan to have the gospel in every known language by the year 2000. That's their goal. It's amazing to understand this. Millions of copies of the Bible are now being sent into the former Soviet Union territory. When I first started teaching about end times just a few years ago in a very definite and strong way, somebody said to me, Ed, I sure wish I could believe that too, but what about, this was 1987, what about the Soviet Union? We have this Iron Curtain up there, and there's millions of people back of that wall that have never heard of Jesus. That was true then. In 1989, much more rapidly than anyone ever suspected, the Berlin Wall came down. Now, I was up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan on the second week of this year, very, very cold and pretty. I learned up there, it seems like it's darker, longer, or something. Anyway, the people leave their Christmas lights on in Saskatoon all winter just to keep them cheered up. Did you know that? Their houses, it's like that. I asked the pastor, it was January 16th, everybody saw their houses all lit up. He says, we do that just to keep from getting, you know, despondent or whatever. At any rate, when I was up there, I was talking to the ministers, and the conference president, Elder Lester Carney, was sitting on the front row, and I said, does anybody here know what happened to the Berlin Wall? And Elder Carney says, well, part of it's in my office. And I said, you're exactly right. That thing has been broken up in little pieces and scattered all over the world as a symbol of the downfall of communism. And now the man who spoke on Net 95 spoke in the Kremlin, inside the Kremlin. I want to tell you something amazing. Just a few weeks ago, Gil Bertaccini, Elder Bertaccini, who is the man at the General Conference Secretary in charge of evangelism in the former Soviet Union territory, came down to me and he said, I've heard about your book even at the door. He said, I want to get a copy. And he took it, and about 10 days later he came back. He says, praise the Lord, I believe every word of it. But then he says, you left out something. And I said, what was that? He says, all the great things that are happening in the Soviet Union. I said, well, tell me. And he said, in the last 4 years, in the former Soviet Union territory, because of Adventist evangelism, more than 43,000 people have been baptized as Seventh-day Adventists. 43,000. It's amazing to see these kind of things happening. Well, I want to tell you that Seventh-day Adventists are doing something about it too. Most of us know about Global Mission. We know about the work of Adventist Frontier Missions and others who are getting involved. It's kind of interesting when you see what's happening. Now I want to share something with you that I think is very interesting. Many years ago, Ellen White wrote this, and it was November of 1885. 110 years ago, she wrote in the Review and Herald, it's in Evangelism, page 693, God will soon do great things for us if we lie humble and believing at His feet. More than 1,000 will soon be converted in one day, most of whom will trace their first convictions to the reading of our publications. Now, when Ellen White wrote that, it seemed like an almost impossible prediction. And yet, in 1993, Seventh-day Adventists added a new believer every 50 seconds. That's 1,728 people every day of the year in one full year. Every day of the year. And we've been doing more than that since. It's very interesting that most of you are aware that we just finished the Net 95 meetings with Mark Finley here in the North American Division. And it's estimated that by the end of this month, the baptisms associated with Net 95 will be nearly 10,000 in the United States. This is amazing. Miraculous stories happen. Most of you have heard some of them on the news in the Adventist Church. It's interesting to me what is happening, and I'm going to share a few things with you that will help you to understand. If what I tell you in the next few minutes does not make you excited, you should go to the emergency room. It's amazing, because something is being done about all of this. In South Mexico alone, 175 people are baptized every day. Where could you live under harder circumstances? You know, the government is unstable and the whole country worse down there where they are. Our family had the privilege of visiting the Western Highlands of New Guinea in a fly and build trip that we were gone from home for 3 weeks. We spent 2 weeks in the highlands of New Guinea. Somebody asked me, what is it like in New Guinea where you were? And our family likes camping. And for years we were backpackers, campers, and we carried little, you know, our backpacks and our camping gear and all of that. And it's rather primitive, but it's fun. And the interesting thing, we've graduated now to a pop-up camper, but you know, that's really nice compared to what we've done before. But someone asked me about New Guinea, and I said, well, it's like camping out all your life with no equipment. That's what it's like over there. The people just do with what they have. That's it. And they're very happy about it. Really, really interesting to see. But in New Guinea, in 1989, the year that we went there, 89-90, in the Eastern Highlands Camp Meeting of New Guinea, they had a baptism at camp meeting. And the Azero River runs through there, and in one day, they baptized 4,457 people. It's the largest baptism in the Adventist Church. But all of those ministers got out in the river and baptized people. The most interesting thing is that the pastor said they had 8,000 people ready, but were limited to the number of people that would fit into the campground. It's an amazing time to be alive. By the way, in New Guinea, you don't come forward at an altar call and get baptized that day. You are in the class ready, or the baptismal class, for at least 1 year until you know the message. And the people know the message. It's amazing to see that. In 1993, in China, the second largest baptism in our history. By the way, does anybody know how much of the world budget of the Adventist Church goes into China? None. We have no organized work there at all. There are no pastors on salary in China. But I want to tell you that just about 2 weeks ago at the General Conference, Cheryl Discanian, who is the one who writes the mission stories for us to read on Sabbath. She gave the announcement for the General Conference audience group there. A few years ago, the government said that there were probably 200,000 people in China who consider themselves Seventh-day Adventists. We believe that that number is more than doubled now. It's amazing, because I'm going to tell you why. They have these house churches where people have church in their house, and they come there with their Bibles and they study. In 1993, of course, we have no pastors in China. One church was planning a baptism. And there is an organization recognized by the government, a Protestant organization called the Three Self Movement. You've all heard about that. They came to our church people and they said, "We would like to assist you. We understand that you're planning a baptism and you have no pastors, so we'll provide the pastors." It was a real nice gesture. But our people, in a kind way, said, "Thanks, but no thanks. We prefer to be baptized by our own people." And so there were two men who were local elders 40 years before, when communism, just before they took over. And you can imagine how old these men are now. They're like at least 70. Two old men took turns baptizing in a single baptismal pool. And when one got so tired he couldn't baptize anymore, he would come out and the other old man would go in. It took them 5 days to do it, but that one church baptized 4,415 people in China. By the way, every one of those people had passed a written examination on the doctrines of the Adventist Church. 2 years ago, there were only 500 members in Moscow. Now there are 10 times that number, 5,000 people. Well, you understand, the list could really go on and on and on. I'm going to share just a couple of other ones with you because they're kind of humorous. Many of our men just love this work and they love evangelism. I had the privilege of going to Brazil last year and I found something very interesting. Actually, it was 1993. Time flies. At any rate, when we were down there at the Global Mission Rally at the college outside Sao Paulo, Eric Monnier was giving the report of the North Brazil Union. Now, this to me was one of the more interesting reports because we were sitting there, and of course, Brazil was almost all Portuguese, and so the people were speaking in the Portuguese language. And I can understand Portuguese, so they had someone sitting behind each of us, or about four of us from the General Conference, and they were whispering in our ear what they were saying in English. But when Eric Monnier got up to the pulpit, he said, "Since I can speak English, somebody needs to translate for the Portuguese people. I want to tell these guys what's happening down here." And then he said, "Do all of you remember who won the Indianapolis 500 race this year?" Well, most of you probably don't follow auto racing, but the Indianapolis 500 is the most prestigious automobile race in the world. It's like the Masters golf tournament that's happening this weekend, you understand. And winning the Indy is winning the big one. And he said, "Well, in case you forgot, his name was Emerson Fittipaldi. He's a Brazilian. You remember reading in the paper probably when he drove his car into the winner's circle after that 500-mile race that they offered him the traditional glass of cold milk, which he refused. He asked instead for a glass of orange juice for Brazil because his family has 500,000 acres of citrus in Brazil and he was doing that special for them. But now let's get back to the pastor." He said, "We are in a race too, a race to take the gospel to everyone in Brazil." Now, this is amazing. He said, "There are no more pit stops. We're going wide open to the end." Last year, he said, our 22 pastors baptized 12,000 people. And this is not in big cities. This is remote areas in Brazil. That's 545 people per pastor. Amazing things continue to happen. If you read the Adventist Review, you noted that last year in Brazil alone, 114,000 people were baptized into the Adventist Church. It's amazing what is going on. Bulgaria doubled its membership in the past 15 months. And you saw on videotape the first baptisms in Mongolia, Outer Mongolia. amazing. The list could go on. Don Noble and Mike Ryan, who are friends of mine, most of you know Don Noble from Maranatha Volunteers International, and Mike Ryan from the Global Mission Office of the General Conference, told me recently that our church is growing so fast that there are more than 10,000 congregations worldwide that have no building. Do you understand? That can't fit in anywhere. More and more people are getting involved in short-term mission experiences. I learned at the breakfast table this morning that our family and the pastor's family are helping to support the same missionary couple in Nepal. That's amazing. It's fun. We just wish we had more money to contribute. It's an exciting time to be alive. With Adventist World Radio, that's what's really doing a lot of the work in China, as you know. It's also going into Cuba, the work of ADRA, the work of the Adventist Media Center. Well, the list could go on and on. I have a friend who was kind enough to give me an endorsement for the book, even at the door on the back, Dr. Willard Register. He called me Thursday morning, my last day in the office, and he usually calls me at 8 o'clock in the morning. He lives in Campbell, California, so you know that it's 5 o'clock in the morning there. But he always gets up and reads and studies for at least an hour and has his devotions and his exercise, and he will frequently call me then. And he called me and just wanted to know how things were going and so on. And he said, well, we had Net 95, and the Lord blessed in a mighty way. And he says, I've just finished my 6th seminar. You know what that means, don't you? Dr. Willard Register, just about 4 years ago, was the head elder of the Campbell, California church. He thought to himself, I wasn't ordained as an elder just to call for the offering and have prayer occasionally on Sabbath. I believe I should be a soul winner too. And do you know what? He studied himself the prophecies, all the literature that was available from the Seminars Unlimited and the Media Center and so on about Daniel and Revelation. He rented a storefront in a shopping mall. You know, one of these strip shopping malls? He rented a storefront, advertised in the paper, and people came. He's finished 6 seminars now, and so far from his seminars, 150 people have been baptized into his local church. Just one man's work. Amazing things continue to happen. I want to tell you about one of my most fun experiences. I was just recently teaching a class at the seminary. It's been a few months ago, and the stewardship director of the Far Eastern Division, now called the Asia Pacific Division, Bob Sipong, was in my class. He had just come for a few weeks to be at the seminary, and he was in my class, and I said during one of the breaks, Bob, I want to ask you a question. I wonder and worry about North Korea because there's millions of people up there and we aren't doing any work in North Korea, just like we're not in China. Do you understand what I mean? Okay, there's no organized work up there. I said to Bob, how are we ever going to take the gospel up there? And a big smile came over his face and he said words to the effect, not to worry, Ed, we have this all planned out. Here's what he said. Every local elder in South Korea has been trained to be a pastor and a church leader. And every pastor has been trained as an evangelist. And the day that we can go to North Korea, every pastor that day will move to North Korea and begin doing full-time evangelism, and the local elders will take over all our churches. It's all planned out. Everything is all planned out. Now, I want to share something with you as we close here that to me is very, very interesting. The big question remains, how will we ever get the work finished? The pessimists say it can't be done. Now, I do not want to have you believe that this article is a pessimistic article. It is rather realistic. I'm going to show you a copy of the Review and Herald here. And it happens to be the December 23, 1993 issue. And inside it, there is an article entitled Battling Against the Odds. Or you might say Swimming Upstream. And it shows here a picture of the global mission map. Now this is a world map on the right-hand side of this page that I'm showing you here. And it's in different colors. The color codes at the bottom show the ratio of Adventists to the general population. Now, where it's yellow here is where we have the least workers. But unfortunately, that's where most people live. And you can't see it from where you're sitting, but there's a black square around that called the 1040 window. Inside that area, 3/4 of Earth's population live. And only 11% of the Adventists are there. In other words, we're not concentrated where we ought to really be working. But the fact remains, Bruce says, unless you should get overly excited about finishing the work, consider this. He used this little illustration. If you were to have a meaningful conversation with someone, every second, this is not possible, it's only an illustration. If in the course of 1 second, you could share your testimony, show a few Bible verses, and this person you're talking to would accept Christ, you could have a meaningful conversation where a person could accept Christ every second of every minute, of every hour, 24 hours a day, it would take you 73 years to witness to everybody in that square. That's how big the world's population is. Now, that's a rather pessimistic picture. Because I said, Bruce, whoever said you're the only one witnessing? If all 8 million of us Adventists witnessed at the same speed your illustration talks about, we could finish the Gospel Commission in less than 4 minutes. Do you understand? That's what unity means. That's what working together means. But now the interesting part about it is all of this. And that is, the pessimists say it can't be done. The optimists, I consider myself to be one of those, are saying that God would not give us a task that was too difficult to do with His power. What do you think? Do you realize, my friends, that both are wrong? We are not going to finish the work. The Bible says that God Himself will do it. Now, this is really, really amazing. I want you to see it. And this is in the section, Romans 9:28. Let's just go to there real quickly, because I know our time is up and we want to make sure we get our plenty of break time here. But Romans 9:28 says, "For He, speaking of God, will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the Lord will make a short work upon the earth." Now, I want to share something with you. I wrote it on pages 201 and 202 of the book, Even at the Door, but I'll just tell you the references. First Selected Messages, page 118. Ellen White indicates that when God sees time is running out, as we do today, that He will step in and use angels to finish the work. God is not in the least disturbed by the fact. For our sake, it's a problem. For His sake, it's no big deal. I'm going to tell you an illustration of this very thing. When Elder Bertaccini came back to my office, and he had read those messages about the angels coming and so on, he said, "Could I tell you a first-hand experience?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "I was holding a meeting personally last year in the former Soviet Union territory, and it was going very hard. The Orthodox Church was putting advertisements in the paper, and all of these problems, you know, don't go to the meetings, or we're going to kick you out of the church, or it's going to be real difficult for you," and so on. And he said, we started out the first week, it was very rocky. We said we were planning a 5-week meeting, but we had just printed the first week's topics and so on. And he said, "I got together with our staff, and we said, you know, if things don't improve the next day or so, we're going to have to close the meeting." Because he just didn't think it would work. There was just so much opposition. But he said that next night when they went to the meeting, as they were leaving, a well-dressed man came out and said to him through his translator, "Do not close the meeting. God will be with you and He will bless you here." And after the man left, he turned to his translator and said, "Who was that? Surely you know him. He spoke to you in Russian." He says, "I've never seen him before." They never saw the man again. But they continued the meeting and they baptized 60 people. It's amazing. He told me that himself just about 3 weeks ago. Amazing things happen. Ask the people with Adventist Frontier Mission if God is miraculously working on their behalf today around the world. Now, how is God going to do it? I'm going to tell you, we're studying about it in our Sabbath school lessons right now about Joshua. You remember, of course, that when the mantle of leadership was laid on Joshua, when he brought the people again for the final time to the banks of the Jordan River, It wasn't just a little dry stream, you know, bed there. It was Jordan at the swelling of Jordan, at the rainy season when it was flood tide. And how were the people going to take their children and their wives and their animals across that? And they were very afraid. And Joshua went and prayed to the Lord and said, God, what should we do? And God gave him the plan. I believe that we're facing a similar situation today. If we were to be honest with ourselves, we would say that in man's own strength, we can't cross the river. But let's look at our Bible. And this is going to be our last text. I want you to look at this one because it, to me, is really amazing. The text is Joshua, the 3rd chapter, and verse 5. When you read this, it is really interesting. And the Lord will bless us, I believe, as we study it. This is something that you might want to take special note of this quarter in our Sabbath school, especially. Very, very interesting. He said, go out and talk to the people. And here's what I want to tell you. It's not going to be anything great you do. It's what I'm going to do for you that gets you on the other side. And so he says in verse 5, Joshua said to the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. How did they ever cross the river? He told them the plan, and the plan was very simple. You pretend like there's not a river there. You line up in certain orders by tribe and so on, and the priests will get in front of you carrying the ark on their shoulders. And when their feet touch the water, the river will stop flowing on one side and flow away on the other. And you're going to walk across on the muddy bottom of the river, right? The Bible said on dry land. Instant dry land. They walked across and they made a monument on the other side. And they said, when your kids come back and say, what's this big pile of rocks doing here? You will have to say, we crossed the river here, but God did it. Isn't that amazing? That's what's going to happen in the near future. We're not going to say we were finally the generation that were so dedicated we took the gospel to all the world. But what we are going to say is we didn't think it could be done in our strength. But we're willing to get our feet wet and launch out and to do what we could do. And God finished the work before our eyes. That's what's happening right now. The greatest sign that Jesus coming is near is what we see God doing right now. It has to be miraculous when you understand the genuine hardness of men's hearts and what we see happening around the world. Well, this afternoon, as you know, we're going to be talking about Sunday's coming. I'm going to share with you the printed information from the Catholic Church and the Christian Coalition about this. We'll also talk about what to do to plan and prepare for persecution. The Bible indicates that persecution is as certain for God's church as the sunrise tomorrow. How can you be ready? And then this evening, the Vesper time, we're going to talk about that very, very important topic. How can we be sure that there are only seconds left till midnight? May the Lord bless you each.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.